When it comes to property investment, are you a fox or a hedgehog? Is property investing a science or an art? Maybe you're not suited to property investment and you shouldn't give up your day job. These are all topics I discussed today with Stuart Wames, and in my mindset moment, I'm going to discuss with you the concept that we're not all created equal. Hey, they all sound like reasonably controversial things to discuss, but you'll understand what I'm getting at as we work through today's show. So welcome to today's episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's most trusted property commentator who has once again been voted Australia's leading property investment advisor. That's the fifth time he's won a similar award in the last 7 years.
If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably interested in property investment and success. But I read an interesting blog a couple of days ago, and I thought I had to speak to the author, Stuart Wames, who's a financial planner, a finance strategist, an accountant, because he said, maybe you shouldn't be investing at all. You should be sticking to your day job. So let's hear what he's really got to say about this. Maybe you shouldn't be investing. Maybe you should be sticking to your day job. Welcome, Stuart.
Hey, Michael. Great to be with you again.
Yeah, well, I have fun in these chats, and you got my attention when you said that. What do you mean by that? Are you really suggesting we shouldn't be getting involved in property investment?
I mean, I think you should be getting involved, but whether you should be running it and whether you should be making all the decisions around it is something to consider. People need to take responsibility for their own money. And when they don't, when people delegate that responsibility, you can't then turn around and go, oh, look, this person ripped me off or I got this bad advice. It's your money. You must take responsibility, ultimate responsibility for it. But that doesn't necessarily extend to you need to take responsibility for making all the decisions. You know, quite often we feel like it's our responsibility. You know, it's my family. I need to look after my family. I need to provide for them. And then the weight of all those financial decisions then rests on my shoulder. That's not necessary. What you're better off doing is having a team of experts, in their field that, you know, that they enjoy, that they're very good at, that they've got runs on the board, and you defer to that team. Now, you make the ultimate responsibility, ultimate decision, I should say, of course. So I'm not just saying outsource it and don't have any involvement, but ultimately, you know, I don't go to my dentist for financial advice. My dentist is a specialist in dentistry. I'm not doing my own dentistry. I wouldn't even consider doing my own dentistry. I know nothing about it. So I go to him and I pay him his reasonable fee for that service. And the same should apply, I think, for financial advice.
We'll get into that in a bit, but I think a lot of people are doing it because it's fun, Stuart. They're looking for excitement. They're looking for thrills. It's fun going out on the weekend buying property, or at least looking for property and researching. But actually looking at properties in your local backyard isn't really research, is it?
I always get a sort of shudder up my spine when a prospective client goes to me, oh, Stuart, I love property. I'm on the internet looking at property every night for a couple of hours. I really enjoy it. I think, oh my God, what challenges are we going to deal with here? You know, that's the thing. A little bit of knowledge is dangerous, Michael. And if you're looking for a hobby, or if it's a hobby, fantastic. But investing's not a hobby. You know, investing should be approached as a business. You know, a hobby brings up connotations on the main goal is enjoyment. The main goal from investing is not enjoyment. I mean, it will deliver enjoyment, you know, if it's successful, of course, and it'll deliver on your lifestyle goals. But if you're investing for fun, then you're probably doing it wrong.
If you're looking for excitement, go bungee jumping, go trail bike riding. That's more fun. But this should be boring. Your investment should be boring so that the rest of your life can be exciting. Now, I know you were discussing a concept of the hedgehog concept by researcher Jim Collins. Maybe you can share that idea with us, because I think that will help us understand where you're getting at with the idea that maybe you shouldn't be so involved.
So I've got a lot of clients that are expert in their field. And so whether it's a surgeon or a barrister, you know, but they're highly trained and they've got a lot of expertise. And so sometimes it makes me sort of question, what are you doing with your time if you're spending, you know, 10 hours a week trying to make your own financial decisions? Wouldn't you be better off spending those 10 hours a week in the profession that you've chosen, or even advancing for people that are younger and, you know, young adults, advancing their profession and standing within their profession, as opposed to, you know, what sort of return are you going to get by spending 10 hours? Where me as a professional, to use Malcolm Gladwell's, you know, 10,000 hours, you've got to do 10,000 hours of practice to become an expert in the field. Like you, Michael, and like me, we've done more than two or three times our 10,000 hours. No one's ever going to catch up to us, you know, unless they convert it into their day job. And I love Jim Collins' work. So if anyone's interested in business, I think you should check out some of his books, Good to Great, Great by Choice. They're two really great books. He uses this Greek parable, this sort of Greek story about the fox and the hedgehog. And the fox knows everything and the hedgehog only knows one thing. So that is, when the fox goes hunting, it's very stealthy. It uses different tactics to try and catch the hedgehog. The hedgehog just has spines. It plays defense. It does something, one thing really well, and that's all it needs to do, is do something really well. And so the way Jim Collins applies it to business is that you should stick to your hedgehog concept, which is, you know, find something that you're passionate about, that you could be the best in the world at, and that is your economic engine, those three things, and the intersection of those three circles is your hedgehog concept. So applying it to personal finance then, Michael, it's really about understanding, where is my time best spent?
So one of the things is spend your time where it's most efficient. But one of the things I see, Stuart, like you, we have a lot of professionals very good at their job, and they think that that will then translate into investing, and it doesn't. Now, it doesn't mean that they're not intelligent. They are very good. Look, there's that old saying that if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, you'll always think it's stupid. So it doesn't mean you're no good, but it doesn't mean that your talents in one area translate to another one. And I've noticed that a lot of doctors are very poor property investors. Same with a lot of solicitors as well. Have you noticed that trend?
Intelligence is not an advantage when it comes to investing. And that sounds perverse, right? Because you think, well, intelligence, applying a high level of intelligence to anything is a good idea. But the problem is, intelligent people tend to overthink it. And then they'll take a strategy and methodology that is perfectly sound by itself and think, well, that's not smart enough for me because I'm smarter than the average bear, so I'm going to add my little pinch of salt. And you only have to be a little bit wrong to be way off from investing. As you know, Michael, if I find a property, fantastic property, but its aspect is impaired, it's on a main road, has noise pollution, privacy aspect, whatever, that's it. You made one little tiny, seemingly tiny mistake, but now you've got yourself a dud investment property. Intelligent people tend to overthink it, and they're not happy with simplicity. You know, sometimes a simple solution to a complex problem is a beautiful thing, and that's really what we should be looking for, is simplicity. But quite often people think we need to have a complex solution to a complex problem. It's just not necessary.
Now, I know my team who sit with new clients hear the story all the time. I've been following Michael's podcast. I've been following his blogs. I've done exactly what he said. But look, I bought this property and it didn't work. And they sort of snigger and say, no, you didn't do exactly what he said. There are 7, 10 things, whatever. And you did 4 of them and you added 3 of your own. And then you think you followed Michael's strategy. No, you didn't. But again, the concept is that you should have a good team around you. And just like you have mentors and mastermind groups, so do I. Getting back to those professionals, I know that banks are very, very comfortable lending to medical practitioners for their own businesses and things like that. But I've noticed they're a little bit scared of them when they go into other areas, because they all like to go to the next level of property development or doing something exciting. Now, that's an area my team specialize in, but because we've done it over and over again, we get it right. But people trying to go out on their own to do it and have fun or get some excitement or speed things up, that's a recipe for disaster, Stuart.
Yeah, it's really well known. There's really some of the banks have some amazing stats on this around the default rates for medicos, particularly doctors, particularly if they're, I mean, whether they're doing private or public work, it's still the same. That is, the default rates are almost zero. You know, you never lose money lending to a doctor. And that's why a lot of the banks have had special sort of professional divisions targeting the medical industry. And a lot of banks have expanded that, although it doesn't, as I understand it, the numbers don't necessarily translate as well to other professionals. But anyway, that's a separate matter. However, the statistics when they're lending to a doctor for doing something other than personal investment or to buy a home, so like you say, property investment or some other business investment, they're terrible. In fact, they're worse than the average. And so I guess it's just some, it's an anecdotal data, I guess, to demonstrate the point that you should stick to your day job, stick to what you're good at. And Michael, you've said, I know you've said for a long time, if you're the smartest person on your team, you've got a problem. If we apply a business lens towards investing, and if you wanted to start a business in whatever industry, in fact, pick an industry you know nothing about, you're going to go out and hire people that have experience in that industry, have runs on the board, have demonstrated they could build a business in that industry. And then what you would do is build a team of those people, and then you would set that business off and set it to work. You wouldn't try and do it all yourself because you know nothing or not enough. I think investing's the same. You need to build, like you say, if you're the smartest person on your team, or if you've got the most experience on your team, you're in trouble.
Well, I think we both recognise that today property investment is much more complicated. Getting finance is much more complicated. The markets are more fragmented. We can't count on the market doing the heavy lifting. So you need a holistic team. And I know both you and I agree with that concept that you need an accountant, you need a financial planner, you need a lawyer, you need a property strategist to maybe give you a big picture plan, and then a buyer's agent to look on the ground to what's going on, because property investment isn't a science, it isn't an art, it's actually a bit of both, isn't it? So you can do all the homework and the research on the internet and even in your local market, but unless you have the perspective, the on-the-ground perspective that money can't buy, you actually miss the important bit, that little bit that makes it either a reasonable investment or a really great investment.
Yeah, so I see these businesses, other sort of buyer's agency businesses, that are heavily data-driven. I've met a few of them. They'll typically consider, you know, borderless investing as well. So they might be based in, say, Sydney, and they'll be contemplating buying property in Cairns, for example, in Queensland. And they'll do that on the basis that they've built a business case using various bits of data that they think that location then is prime for growth. And so that happens at an industry level, but also at an individual level. Sometimes I imagine you and I meet people that are also heavily data driven, maybe because that's what they think is the right thing to do. And that's not to say data is useless, although I think a lot of it is. And a lot of it is, it doesn't necessarily tell you what's going to happen. It tells you what has happened. And arguably that applies or is applicable less to investing. But I think you're bang on. If you just bury your head in the data, and remember, I'm an accountant. I'm analytical by nature. You know, I love data. I get a lot of enjoyment of building spreadsheets and all those. It sounds very nerdy, but it's true. But I realize that if you bury yourself in data, with respect to property, you're going to make a mistake. You're going to make a very, very expensive mistake. Data's part of the journey. You know, you need to look at some of it, but if you don't apply that local on the ground knowledge, the art, what I call it, the art that applies to property, it's too risky and you're going to make a mistake. And with all these things, like even the stuff that we just talked about having the team and having a trustworthy team and so forth, let's not forget we're investing several hundreds of thousands of dollars when we're making a property investment decision. To my mind, why would you even contemplate making a decision of that magnitude without some sort of external help? It defies belief. And in fact, I know I'm prattling on here, Michael, but just can I share a story that sort of demonstrates that I eat my own cooking as recent as yesterday? So my wife and I have actually sold a property and bought a property over the last couple of months. And in fact, the last month, and in fact, it's they're two fantastic. Well, I think at least now they're two fantastic transactions. I'm sure I'll look back in 10 years and go, they really were good transactions. And I mentioned it only just, it's a surprise, I guess, given Melbourne's lockdown that we're still entering in those transactions. So we had a property and a trust, a discretionary trust that we sold. And I thought, even though I'm a registered tax agent and have plenty of experience in that space, I thought there might be a way in which we could save some capital gains tax, which was going to be considerable on this property, a few million dollars. I knew of someone, an expert in that area, a particular sort of tax expert, and went to her to get that advice. Now, that advice came back yesterday, and it's all in our favor, which is amazing. It'll save us several hundreds of thousands of dollars. And now, I haven't received her bill yet. Because I know her, it's probably only been a couple of grand, I would imagine. But I'd be happy to pay, obviously, $10,000 or $20,000 to save that sort of money. And the point is, I guess, that I would regard myself as a tax expert, but I'm not an expert in that particular field. So I will go out and I will pay someone a fair and reasonable price for expert advice, because I know that professional advice is always cheap. At the end of the day, when you look at the value that you receive, whether it's reducing your risk from a tax audit perspective or a compliance perspective, or finding a way to save tax. So I eat my own cooking, and I know you do as well, Michael. We don't do our own dentistry. We don't do our own specialized tax advice.
What you mentioned is something I've noticed as well. All the successful investors I know have a team around them, and they're prepared to pay for advice, while the average investor finds their advice for free on the internet. And as we said a moment ago, the data can be terribly wrong. I probably guess that probably the most common data one sees is either auction clearance rates, which today are pretty meaningless in the funny environment we're in, or median prices. And people say, hey, the median price in that suburb has grown, so therefore they either say it'll continue doing it, or sometimes they go the other way around and say they hasn't grown for a while, now it's that turn. So first of all, they've got to interpret it right. But in my mind, median price is probably the worst of the data sets, because it doesn't really tell what an individual property's value has done, Stuart.
I love the articles that you sometimes read. Houses in Toorak have fallen 10%. I love reading those. It's mind-numbing. Obviously, you know, the media are writing articles to attract attention and attract readers and clicks and all those sorts of things. So they certainly do that. And, you know, there's articles that run periodically around, you know, the top 10 growing suburbs in Melbourne, Sydney or Brisbane or whatever it might be. It makes for interesting reading. It's a little bit titillating, I guess, but is it useful in an investment application? It's completely useless, I would argue. The data, you've got to then look at the data set. You know that particularly in smaller suburbs, that, you know, geographically smaller suburbs, the data set won't be statistically reliable. You've got to look at, you know, what sort of properties have been going or been selling on the market at that particular time. I live in East Melbourne, and just over the last year, you know, two really large developments have just come online in terms of completion. So if you have a look at apartment sales data, they're going to be heavily skewed by those two developments because that geographical market is small. So how reliable is that information? Another one, Michael, I see is, I can't remember the provider that publishes it, but it's almost like a real-time property price movement measure, you know, that almost measuring what's happening to property last week, for example.
It ticks over in real time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the hedonic index at CoreLogic, who bring out a lot of very, very good information. But some of their data, like that one, real time doesn't make a difference, does it? You've got to understand what properties have actually sold. And also, what about the long-term change in that suburb? Has it gentrified? And so is the sort of property selling today the same sort of property that sold 10 years ago? Or in the new housing estates, they're now nice houses. A couple of years ago was land or was big acreage. So what is the selling price of a particular property today compared to 10 years ago, the same property, as opposed to what's the median price in that area? So you've got to understand, because you can get it very wrong, can't you?
Yeah, that new build example that you used, Michael, is a perfect one, right? If we look at the 10-year growth, and the 10-year growth is telling us it's 15%, you've got to look at where the distribution of those returns were. So if it's a new build area, perhaps all that growth came in the first 3 years as it was, as they were building up, it built a Coles supermarket and a doctor's surgery and so forth, attracted more investment. That might have precipitated or driven all that growth in that earlier period. And then perhaps the last 7 years of that period, there was very little growth. So it can be really deceptive when you're looking at those figures to really understand. That's why you need that on the ground experience to know, you know, that this street works or this side of that street doesn't work. This location is heavily influenced by a certain sector or a situation that's changed within the area. It's very, very important.
Just going back to, is property investment an art or a science? I remember a couple of years ago, somebody said to me he'd been to a course, he'd spent a lot of money on a seminar, and he's got a checklist. And if he follows that checklist, he's going to be a very successful investor. And I said, there's one thing missing from that checklist. And he went silent. He then eventually asked, well, what is it? And I said, perspective. If you've got a checklist, they're not all the same. They're not all in the same sequence or the same order of magnitude. So if everything's important, then nothing is important. So just having a checklist or just understanding the data without understanding the significance of it on the ground, that's the art part of it. And that comes from experience. From years and years of experience. And while you can't buy that, as we said a few minutes ago, you can hire it. There are people out there in the buyer's agency space, in the finance space, in the accounting space, who are happy to help you through the maze.
I remember I was looking at an apartment for a family member. Well, family member said, I'm interested in this apartment. And it was in Paran in Melbourne, and the street just escapes me. But anyway, I remember looking at it, and in my own mind, I went through the checklist, you know, floor plan, aspects, type of property, location, all the sorts of things that you would normally think about when contemplating investment property. It looked pretty good. I couldn't really find any analytical problems with the property. Then I spoke to a buyer's agent and he goes, nah, that street isn't any good. It's too many cars get broken into in that street. So the tenant turnover is too high. Now, those things you only find from experience and you would only find out after the fact. And how much does it cost to make a property mistake? You've got to pay stamp duty, selling costs, re-entry, the time that you've wasted sitting in that dud investment, the missed returns, the opportunity cost. You know, it's an endless list of problems when you make a mistake. I've used that example a few times, but I think it's a really good one to sort of demonstrate how the intersection of that knowledge and experience creates the most amount of value.
And that's where the problem comes when people fly in, fly out, and do some homework on the internet, do the data, do the research, and we already said that's not too good. Then they fly in and they actually think, hey, that's a good street, that's a good area. And our buyer's agents sort of have a little snigger and a little laugh because we've already discarded that because we know why one side of the street is better than the other, why a particular style of property is better than another. And all our buyer's agents at Metropole are actually ex-selling agents. So they've come from that background of knowing what buyers want, what sellers want, what goes on well. So a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, Stuart.
Well, I've got some clients, you know, just thinking about that comment, I've got some clients that I would say are really astute. I mean, if I'm talking about a relatively complex financial planning or stock market issue, I can have a conversation with them. You can sense that they really get what you're talking about. Quite highly regard them, but they're missing that last 5%, and that last 5% is crucial. So even though I think that they've got a good knowledge set, they've got a good experience, they understand what's going on, sometimes they make comments or observations and you think, no, that's wrong. You miss that sort of 5%. And it shows that, or it demonstrates to me that how easy it is to get a false sense of comfort that you think you know what's going on. And if it's not your day job, if you're not doing it all the time, if you're not immersed in it, if you're not totally invested in it, excuse the pun, you're just never going to be as good as you or I are going to be good in our particular field because we've been doing it for decades and we do it every single day and we're passionate about it. That's one of the things about the hedgehog concept. We're passionate. So we're constantly thinking about it in our own minds for ourselves. And I think that's the other thing too, is that we've built wealth ourselves. You know, we've contemplated all these issues for our own personal a lot of them for our own personal circumstances. So, you know, that I think that sort of level of expertise should never be overlooked.
Not only have we built wealth, but we've kept it. And I think that's one of the important principles, because I play a little game with a good friend of mine, Rob Belander, who has since retired as a solicitor. And every now and then we play, where are they now? Because we've been around for a long time, and we pull out the old copies of Australian Property Investor magazine that isn't written anymore, or Your Investment Property magazine, and you see the glossy ads with the guys there who tell you how you're going to get rich quick, or they're standing in front of their red Ferraris, but they're not there anymore. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of damage along the way. Along the way, our investors have been hurt. So don't just look for somebody who seems to have done well in the short term. They've got to have kept it through a couple of cycles, Stuart.
Whether it's a lawyer or whether it's a tax accountant or so forth, that longevity is a very important piece of that puzzle, I think. Not only have they seen different markets and different situations, but they've seen a significantly higher amount of clients. And you know that sometimes we meet people and we don't end up doing business with them, but we learn from their experience, whether it's good or bad. And you see, so it's like reading, you know, thousands and thousands of case studies each and every year, and you get to sort of learn from their experiences and past decisions, how they've played out and what issues they've now come up against. The longer that you've been in business then and been around, I think it speaks to two things. I think it speaks to the depth of experience, and then I think it speaks to the methodologies that you've been employing. Because really nothing has changed over the last 100 years in terms of how do you invest in assets. You invest in assets that are always going to have benefit from being short supply and benefit from excessive demand. It's not difficult to then understand then how you build wealth by employing those sorts of strategies. And so I'm a big believer in evidence-based strategies. Where is the evidence? And so if I come to you, Michael, and I say, well, why should I go and buy a 1970s apartment in Paran, you will be able to talk to me for a couple of hours, giving me all the evidence about why those assets are going to work and why, say, a new build apartment in the city isn't going to work. That's incredibly important. And remember, again, we're contemplating decisions that are several hundreds of thousands of dollars. In fact, if we then think about the future value of that property asset, we're talking about millions of dollars. They're very, very, very important decisions.
Because the mistakes compound, but so does the success. So if you get it right, it's going to compound year after year and you're going to do better. But if you get it a little bit wrong, doesn't seem much different in the first year or two, does it? But you go out 5 years, 10 years, and I bet you've got those spreadsheets where you've got the charts, the lines that show how different successful and reasonable investing happens.
And you'll pay the same stamp duty, you'll pay the same accounting fees, you'll pay the same loan interest. You know, whether you've got a dud property or a great property, that the holding costs are going to be broadly the same. What is different is obviously the growth and the value of that asset over time. And ultimately, what we really want to do is earn money while we're sleeping. So if we've got really good quality assets and we hold them for the long run, we get that sense of enjoyment that we're not going out and earning an income, that actually we'll get to a point that our assets are generating more wealth than what we are in our day jobs. And that's the key. That's what we're all driving for.
Well, there's been a couple of articles in the papers recently about certain suburbs where houses are making more money each year than the people living in them. And I guess that's where you want to be. You want to have a cash machine that's going to give you some choices in life, some freedom in life. And that's not easy. So why try and do it on your own? I think part of it's also ego, though, isn't it? It comes up a few times in our discussion that it's ego to say, I can't do it on my own. I've actually got to get other people's advice.
I think women are much better at making financial decisions than men. Yes. I hesitated to say that.
I saw you hesitate, Stuart, but I think you're right. They don't have as big an ego in this field anyway.
Careful, Michael. They're more willing to ask for help, and they're more willing to put up their hands and say, I don't know, you're the expert, please tell me. And that's a generalization, of course, but I think typically that is the case. And there's no place for emotion when it comes to financial decisions. So that's either fear or greed. And they're the two primary emotions, I think, that drive a lot of decisions. Lowering the ego, saying, look, I'm not an expert in this field. And probably some of the clients, you know, the clients I think about, the clients that I really enjoy working with, that that I've helped them or I've got the highest level of confidence that they're going to be successful, are those that actually come in and say, Stuart, you are the expert. Tell me what to do and I will follow it. Of course, they're not going to continue to follow my advice if it's not working for them. That's clear. But then at least you know you're going to be able to shape their decisions in the way that you think is in their best interest or know is in their best interest. And they're really the best clients to work with. Whereas if you're working with, you know, I say there's two types of clients, delegators and validators. If you're working with the validator just wants to come in and you to validate their own decision that they've already made. It's impossible to work with those sorts of clients. You know, they're always going to think their 5% adds a bit of value over and above what your advice will be, and it just doesn't work.
So in summary, we go right back to the beginning. Stick to your day job. Use your income earning capacity to make you attractive to the banks, and use money management, delayed gratification to save money, invest, build a cash machine so that you're going to have more choices in life. And a big part of that's finance. And I recognize that you've recently written another book about finance and the changing world of finance at the moment. Do you want to just quickly tell us about that, Stuart?
Yeah, it's called Rules of the Lending Game. And obviously the rules of the lending game have changed significantly over the last few years. Lending is a significantly different market, but access to investment capital is critical. So if we had just notionally, if we had unlimited access to borrowings, to investment capital, we could build a substantial investment portfolio. But the reality is we don't. We all have a limited amount of borrowing capacity, either by driven by our risk profile or circumstances or by the banks. And so therefore, maximizing that scarce resource is key because if it allows me to buy one additional property safely, mind you, and I'm not saying go out and borrow to your eyeballs, but if it allows us to borrow one additional property safely, then that can have, as we've spoken about, a very large compounding impact. So it's called Rules of the Lending Game. You can just Google it, or you can buy it.
There'll be a link in the show notes. I'll put a link in the show notes to make it really easy for people. And if they do click on the link, is there something special that you can do for them?
Yes, if they just put in your surname, Yardney, they'll get a discount. So we'll send them out a book for $20 and we'll pay for the postage.
Well, I've read it and $20 is very, very cheap. I think it's great advice. Look forward to having you back again on the Michael Yardney podcast real soon. So in summary, property investment is partly science, partly art. Data is useful, but you've got to know how to interpret it, when to interpret it. But I'm not sure how to finish off. Am I meant to be a fox or a hedgehog, Stuart? I don't really know.
Oh, you want to be the hedgehog.
The hedgehog. Okay, let's all be a hedgehog. Thanks for your time, Stuart.
Thanks, Michael.
Now, in a moment, I'm going to share with you my regular mindset message. But before I do, I'd like to just hark back on some of the things Stuart and I spoke about. And if you're keen to become a property investor or a property developer, if you're keen to take advantage of the opportunities that are currently there in the market as we're starting to move into the next stage of the property cycle, why not have a chat with my team at Metropole? Remember, we have no properties for sale, but we give you strategic advice. We help you get direction, results, and certainty in what's going on because we've had the perspective of investing through multiple cycles. In fact, I'm really proud that my team has won 3 awards in the last year as Australia's leading property consultants. So we offer you a time-tested system, a proven track record, and on-the-ground experience from our offices in Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane. Our buyer's agents team don't fly in and out. They help you select the right property and secure it at the best price if that's what you want. But it always starts with putting a strategic plan together to help you become the person you plan to become. So go to metropole.com.au, find out more about our services, leave us your details, and why not get my team on your side to get you the financial freedom you're looking for.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In my mindset message today, I'd like to share with you a provocative quote by the late actor and humanitarian Hugh O'Brien. And when I read it, I actually had to look at it twice because he said, I don't believe all people are born equal. He said, created equal in the eyes of God, yes, but physical and emotional differences, parental guidelines, varying environment, being in the right place at the right time, all these play a role in enhancing or limiting an individual's development. And he's right. He went on to say, but I do believe every man and woman, if given the opportunity and encouragement to recognise their potential, regardless of their background, has got the freedom to choose in our world. Will an individual be a taker or a giver in life? Will that person be satisfied merely to exist or seek a meaningful purpose? Will he or she dare to dream the impossible dream? And he finished off by saying, I believe every person is created as the steward of his or her own destiny with great power for a specific purpose, to share with others through service a reverence for life in the spirit of love. Well, interesting thoughts. So, no, we're not all born equal, but if you're listening to this in Australia or one of the other great countries that a lot of people listen to this podcast in, you've already won the lottery in life. You've won the lottery by being born at this time. Now, I know there are a lot of challenges going on in the world and probably in your life personally, but you have the opportunity, as Hugh O'Brien said, to decide your destiny. You're the steward of your future. So be the pilot of your life. Don't be a passenger just going on a ride. Well, at the beginning of today's show, I've mentioned to you that some people may not be suitable to get involved in property investment. But now I hope you understand what I was getting at and what steward meant as well. If you got some benefit from this, why don't you help me in my quest of getting more people financially literate by telling somebody about the Michael Yardney podcast or leaving a review for it on your favourite podcast app. Tell one of your friends, two of your friends, because we've got to all help each other get out of the slump that Australia's in at the moment. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, you can catch me on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney or in my daily property update newsletter. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?